Today's show, ACC comes to an agreement with Florida State and Clemson, what it means for those two schools, the whole league, the all of college football, Notre Dame, the playoff, and a new TV show on A&E. Could it become a college franchise?
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
This is not a good thing for college sports.
Ross Dellinger.
I mean, a lot changes in, you know, 1 week in college athletics. 5 years is an eternity.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I hate to remind everybody, we can't just all sit there and cheer for revenue and ratings all the time.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we have potential settlement between the ACC and the two ACC members suing the ACC, Clemson and Florida State. This has been a big topic for a while here. How would the ACC survive? Can it survive? How's it going to dole out its money? Can Florida State or Clemson make a jailbreak and get to another league that has more revenue? So we have a potential settlement that will go down on Tuesday. I guess it's still got to get ratified and voted upon and caucused and who knows what other things they got to do over there. But it looks like a deal is in place that would do two main things. One would reset how revenue is distributed within the ACC to the favor of the schools that are most watched on television, a television component where there would be a sliding scale or the revenue pie would be divided based on how many total viewers your games produce, which would obviously favor Florida State and Clemson, among others, and not favor other schools. There's other revenue bits beyond just the six. Remember, we had the success bonus or whatever they were calling it. Like if you did well, you got a bonus. But that could be a difference between if you come out on the pie, number one opposed to number 18, whatever's going to be the lowest, maybe a Wake Forest or something. That could be up to a $20 million difference in revenue the ACC would pay team number one, for sake of argument, let's say Florida State, more than they would pay team 18, let's say Wake Forest. Additionally, it would, Ross can correct me here, but it would basically set the parameters of how much it would cost to gain your media rights, grant of rights back. Currently, each school has given the ACC through 2036. And each year, the amount of money you would have to pay, I think right now it's well over $200 million, which is more than anyone's got. So they're kind of stuck and you wouldn't even have your rights. At some point, you would be able to get that number down to more manageable and you would be able to get your television rights, which would then make you attractive for another league to snatch you up. There was a lot of talk out of Florida State and Clemson. Well, you know, we could get a deal right away with the Big Ten or something like that. That has not happened. But by 2030, when the Big Ten redoes its television deal, that very much could be in play. So I see this as a victory for Clemson and Florida State, but it does give the ACC some time and some stability for at least the next 5 or so years. Ross, where did I go wrong in that summary?
I think you laid it all out there. The 200 million number, I didn't think there was, you know, a figure attached to breaking the grant of rights right now. But I think that this establishes one, right? And by 2030 or 2031, I think it probably, because the number decreases as you get closer to that 2036 end date, the exit fee, basically a penalty fee for breaking the grant of rights, will decrease to a point in 2030 where it maybe becomes affordable. I think ESPN reported that it they didn't cite, I think, a specific number, but said under 100 million. I've heard that as well. I think we're going to probably get a more clear picture on that number tomorrow, well, on Tuesday, when they have their board meetings and all this happens. So it is, it's kind of a two-part thing here. It's the grant of rights deal, so they know exactly how much they have to pay as it'll decrease to the end date. And then the extra TV money, right? The uneven distribution of your TV money, which I think is way more interesting because it kind of sets a precedent at the power conference level to do uneven distribution. And you can bet the other conferences, specifically SEC and Big Ten, which have plenty of big football brands, are going to want something similar at some point in their league. And that's going to be really interesting. The ACC kind of opened the door now to this being a possibility. And Dan, when you for Clemson, you know, you said you see it as a win for Clemson and Florida State. I think many in those camps would agree that while they sued, especially Florida State, with what seemed like an intent to leave, if they couldn't leave, this was the second best option, right? Is getting more money and getting some clarity or an amendment to the grant of rights. But for the ACC side, there is, you know, there's some stability there, knowing that at least for the next few years, you know, you stop this legal, all the legal stuff with two of your members, which is such a distraction. You know, Jim Phillips has said so many times it's hurt the league. So you stop that, you get stability there. What is kind of funny is, you know, you got two things going in the ACC when it comes to uneven distribution. You've got this new thing, this TV money, but you also got, as you mentioned, Dan, the success initiatives, what they're calling it. And it basically is rewards schools based on football success. And if you get number one in that, which would be going to the national championship game, it's around $25 million, right? Because you're going to hit all these benchmarks of winning like four playoff games, three playoff games, whatever, finishing the top 25, playing in a bowl game. All these are like benchmarks for units, and you can get like $25 million. That's just the success initiative. You get another $15 to $20 million if you get number one in the TV ratings. You put that together, you're looking at, you know, $35-40 million that a school could get at the, you know, that's the best, right? That's the highest, and that closes the gap, at least on some years, with the SEC and Big Ten money.
Yeah, there's some elements of this that are good, and I think some elements of this that I find bad. I don't like tying revenue to TV ratings, because that is not success on the field. That's eyeballs, which doesn't necessarily make you a successful athletic program. If it did, Florida State wouldn't have gone 2-10 this year. There's been plenty of examples. I mean, Michigan, I'm sure, drew excellent ratings this last year when they went 7-5. You know, I would much prefer to see this tied strictly to on-field and on-court success. I mean, if this is going to be good for Florida State, here's Florida State's records for the last 8 years. 2-10, 13-1, obviously great. 10-3, good, but 5-7, 3-6, 6-7, 5-7, 7-6. It's great that people are still watching them, but there hadn't been much to watch for 6 out of the last 8 years there. So rewarding them for this, and then the other part of it that I don't like is one of the best ways to bump your ratings is to play Notre Dame. And guess who's going to get to play Notre Dame more often now? Florida State, Clemson, Miami, the big brand teams. They've already said that. They're going to set up schedules where the ACC games will regularly include the biggest brands. Some other teams might be good enough to beat Notre Dame and to get a nice rating bump, and they're not going to get a chance to play them. Louisville beat Notre Dame badly a couple of years ago while winning 10 games and going to the ACC championship game. Are they going to even get a chance to play that game going forward? I don't know. So tying things to ratings to me just seems to – tying it to ratings and tying your scheduling to the top brands getting to play Notre Dame is a self-perpetuating cycle of distancing your top schools from your bottom schools. And hey, that may be the kind of thing that Pittsburgh and Syracuse and Georgia Tech and Louisville and whoever and home just have to go along with. But it's another element here where we are further setting up hierarchies within the Division I, within FBS, and now even within conferences. Not my favorite way to do business.
Yeah, that it just feels like this is just like it's a boulder going down the hill, and it doesn't go in a direct path. And then like they try to slow it down. You know, it's like mistakes made 2 decades ago, 1 decade ago, you're still dealing with. And I agree, the idea of TV ratings as the determination of money is tough. I'll be interested to see the details here. So there are things that like Georgia Tech gets to play Georgia. Louisville plays Kentucky, right? So you could have, I think there was a very big rating for that Georgia Tech-Georgia game. Does Georgia Tech get any credit for that game because it's non-conference? I thought setting up the Notre Dame bit, I don't know how this all played out, but if Clemson and Florida State set that Notre Dame thing up and then came back with this, that'd be a nice little chess move because you know you're going to get a big rating, but Notre Dame is always going to give you a rating. Programs like Louisville, Pitt, NC State that have had good football programs through the year, Syracuse is on the rise. They don't get that opportunity. Georgia Tech is on the rise. How does that play out? How about the early season games? ACC does really well on that first weekend. Florida State, Boston College was a big game. Boston College crushed them. You know, Florida State was in Georgia Tech in Ireland. Some different things like that. And what is the battle going to be now over TV time? Because that's always a fight in these leagues. Who gets the best TV exposure? Who gets the best time slot? Well, now there's literal money attached to it. Couple things here. Let's start with this. What is interesting about this, though, is this the end, or at least somewhat the end, of the idea that conferences should care about markets? And what I would say is the idea that when we played the conference realignment game for all these years, it was get into this television market. And that's why Boston College is in this league to begin with, right? Well, Boston's a big television market. Sure, for the Patriots and the Celtics and the Red Sox, not for Boston College, right? But it's that old thinking of how the old Big East was put together with TV markets. What they're basically saying is we may be in Tallahassee, Florida, but look how many people watch our games. And this is, you're cashing in on your brand. Clemson, South Carolina is not a big television market. I don't think it is a television market. I don't know what it would be. Greenville or something?
Greenville, Spartanburg, yeah.
It ain't Boston. No. But look at your ratings. So is this finally the realization that we don't care? We expanded this league to all these teams because of markets. Those markets never panned out. Like they've been playing ACC football and basketball in Boston for what, 20 years? 20 plus years?
20 hasn't, plus, yeah.
Hasn't taken. You know, so it's a little like, well, maybe that was a mistake to begin with, but now we're finally dealing with it. I don't know. What do you think of that, Pat?
Yeah, no, it's a valid point. That's often brought up as a selling point for a lot of these schools. Well, you get the Bay Area with Cal and Stanford. Well, that's great. Does anybody there watch Cal or Stanford football? No. You know, Pittsburgh is a big market, but it's a pro market. Syracuse is in New York, but it's a pro market in New York. So from that standpoint, that's always been a bit of a fallacy. And I think probably most people have realized it, but this makes it much more tangible, I think, to your point, Dan, that you know, that if you just break it down by how many viewers are watching each school's games, it tells you a different story than what city the school resides in. And if that's going to be one of the subdividing factors, it's a pretty significant one and a pretty interesting one. I mean, you can look at the SEC. The University of Alabama is, first of all, in a state with not that many people, and secondly, it's in the Tuscaloosa, Birmingham TV market. That's the biggest one in the state, but that's barely top 50, I would guess, in the country. So, you know, but that's a huge, Alabama's a huge draw, always been the case. So, you know, the I think the analytics and the metrics of it all are changing. The question is, you know, how much do they further change and further subdivide within conferences, which obviously Ross alluded to, and, you know, could be the next big fissure in this whole thing if we get there.
Yeah, it's the impacts of this, you know, across the country to other leagues is really, really interesting. Not from a grant of rights perspective, but from the whole uneven distribution of wealth. You know, a lot of conferences in the past have done somewhat of an unequal distribution. You remember the Mountain West with Boise State, and I think Texas with the Big 12 maybe at some point did something similar, right? I think that, you know, a lot of the Pac-12 schools like Washington and Oregon, USC, UCLA, before they decided to leave, I think they wanted it. They at least proposed it, and it didn't. I don't think it had support. And that the ACC situation, I guess, was closer to that, you know, comparable to that than maybe anything is. And look, I mean, the ACC decided. You know, with this decision, gets stability, unlike the Pac-12 obviously had, right? And so I think it, from a league's perspective, it saved the league at least for a little while. And you know, but it's only probably a temporary fix. I think we all know that. We wrote in our story this morning, Dan, you know, the 2030, in between 2030 and 2032 is a momentous kind of like stretch for college football specifically, but college sports, where you have a lot of deals that kind of come open that could really have an impact on the future landscape. The CFP, college football playoff deal, comes open. It ends in 2031. The men's basketball tournament deal ends in 32, maybe? Pat, is it 32, I want to say?
I think so. I believe it's 32,
and then,
yes.
And then the Big 12 and Big 10 deals are up in 30 and 31. The television contract. So a lot of things around those years. So it's not a coincidental, like the grant of rights becomes maybe more affordable for Clemson and Florida State to potentially pay it, or any other league or any other team in the league to potentially pay it, you know, by that stretch. I think that's circled from a lot of people of a time where we could have a real splintering of FBS that's been kind of long projected, and with the revenue share era coming, we'll be 5 years into that too. So you'll be able to see the ramifications of that, which are going to be, you know, a continued separation gaps within FBS and maybe within the power conferences as well.
Yeah, I would it seems like this is a table setting or placeholding agreement right now. Right, that does get you through 5 years, and it's good for the ACC. I guarantee in the back of everybody's minds in the ACC is like, don't be the Pac-12. And so, you know, fear of that, and just the, you know, this terminal destabilization and people looking to get out. Okay, we've addressed that, and we've taken care of that and stopped the lawsuits, and people can actually save a few million on lawyer fees. So you got that, but this is a 5-year plan, right? Until we start to see whether the whole world really blows up and whether the Big Ten and SEC do something different, or whether they grab teams from that they may want that are not in their leagues and do something different, or the NCAA ceases to exist, or who knows. But for now, this kind of holds the chessboard in place until somebody flips the chessboard over in 2030.
Well, and Dan, one more thing I wanted to add is, you know, I think it should be known everybody's going to try to take a victory lap on this on Tuesday. The ACC, Florida State, Clemson. You know, the only real winners, some might say, are the lawyers. But I think it needs to be known, and I wrote it in our story, but also in the past I've written it, is Florida State proposed this, you know, a couple years ago to the ACC, and I think they were kind of laughed out of the room. And out of frustration, I think Florida State's administration, AD Michael Alford, went in front of the in a live kind of public meeting, went in front of his board 2 years ago and basically put it all out there about this proposal of the uneven distribution and how it should be tied to viewership numbers. So certainly, you know, this is something that isn't wholly new. It's been out there, and, you know, it's one of those things that kind of took, I guess, a threat of leaving a lawsuit to get everybody in the ACC on board with this uneven distribution. But I think a lot of people would agree with Pat in that when you do something like this, you know, it could be detrimental to the league's future, because you are, you know, hey, I mean, we talked about the CFP format, right? The Big Ten and SEC, 4 automatic qualifiers each, 2 each for the Big Ten, Big 12, and SEC, ACC. I mean, that's uneven, right? That's uneven distribution access. And we, you know, that's obviously been met with a lot of negativity. It's the same with this on this level. You know, it's a similar. We saw the CFP distribution, uneven distribution last spring with this new extension. So we're seeing it ripple down from that.
Yeah, look, this is not a good thing for college sports. I mean, it just isn't a good thing. I don't think anyone would want this if you could wave a magic wand. How do you? If you're gonna come in as one of the smaller schools, and I would, you know, Boston College, Wake Forest, Syracuse, maybe Cal or Stanford, I'm not sure. Having less revenue, is how do you then compete? It's already hard to compete. Florida State, Clemson, Miami, they have other advantages, namely proximity to talent in the state of Florida, South Florida, Atlanta, all that. You don't have that in your backyard at some of these other places. So it's hard enough to compete when all of a sudden these other places have more money to spend. So ideally, if you join a league, everyone's equal, let's play ball. And that's how it was. And that really worked when they were 8 or 9 members of a league back in the day. And they were like-minded places. They were similar geographic. I look at this and go, you know, what was great? What is the number one thing you think of about ACC? Tobacco Road. That's what it was supposed to be, right? Tobacco Road. And the great basketball rivalries of Tobacco Road. You had 4 schools in the state. And then Virginia was, you know, would jump in, and Maryland. And then they slowly added teams because they had to, but, you know, had to get some football. And now it's, you know, we're everywhere. And it's crumbling. They just kept putting patchworks up on the dam, and now it's all busting open. To your point, Ross, absolutely, I think this is a victory for Florida State and Clemson and maybe and some other schools. North Carolina, which sat back and said, hey, let them be the villain. We'll just let them do all the work and pay the legal fees. We'll just sit here as North Carolina knowing we're going to be fine because we're North Carolina. But Florida State absolutely asked for this, and now they finally get it. Maybe the ACC is a winner because they held them off for this many years. But in the end of the day, Florida State got what they want. And I would say this. We can go through this of what each place should do. Because the ramifications for this, I know nothing's going to happen next week, but the ramifications here are enormous, and not just for the ACC. When you talk about uneven, as Ross is alluding, you can laugh at all this stuff and, oh, we're in the SEC, we're good. Careful. Unless you're Georgia and Alabama and LSU and Texas, careful. Unless you're Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan, we'll see. there's levels to this stuff, and everyone knows their level, and it can get real nerve wracking real quick. So the ramifications of this idea are not good for anybody, because what stops the Big Ten from saying the same thing? We know who puts out the big, you want to know who gets the big TV numbers? They will put Ohio State playing Akron at big noon before they put Minnesota playing Iowa. So you don't want to play that game. And that sucks. That sucks. Because it's just things you can't overcome. Demographics, population trends, you know, branding for 50, 60 years, pro sports, all of those things. But let's start with Florida State and Clemson. To me, this is an enormous victory, because if they were allowed to leave the ACC at this very moment, they don't really have anywhere to go. Now, if they were available, would the SEC and Big Ten all of a sudden perk up? Perhaps to probably. But as of now, neither league wants to expand. Neither league is making any dynamic. We want them. We're ready. Here's an open invite. So for the next 5 years, you have time to collect extra money. You could take let's say you get $20 million more per year and you just put it away. They won't. They'll spend it. But let's say they put it away.
Never put it away. Nobody puts anything away in college athletics. No, they already earmarked all their money they're getting from the CFP in 2 years.
Let me be Dave Ramsey here. He likes Tennessee football. He's a football fan. Let me be Dave Ramsey. Put your money, your $20 million away for the next 5 years. Put it in a little high-interest savings account even. Mm-hmm. You're going to have $110, $20 million, and then 2030, when the buyout is $100 million, voila. But you've got 5 years to build yourself up, make some more money, gain an advantage over these things, and be in perfect position to leave when that invite is available, right? And that's why I think this is a huge victory, where yes, they have to stay for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. They don't have anywhere to go for 4, 5, 6, 7 years. So what do you think, Pat? That we'll go with that part, then we'll do what the ACC should do.
Yeah, no, this is a good outcome for FSU and for Clemson, especially when it became increasingly clear there was nowhere else to go, and whether that was false bravado, a miscalculation, or they just said, we're putting it out there and we don't care if we look stupid, doesn't really matter in the end. They got something out of it. You know, they absolutely were, especially Florida State, bad conference partners, injured the conference, I thought damaged the conference. But in the end, they picked up some advantages and some more money that they weren't getting, as it were. So this is good for them. And yes, if the difference in revenue distribution now allows Florida State to not go 2-10 and, you know, get back to being good, and Clemson continues to be good, and Miami presumably is good, and not blowing a 21-0 lead to Syracuse, because you do have to do something on the field. I hate to remind everybody, we can't just all sit there and cheer for revenue and ratings all the time. You have to win. If they're able to do that, more power to them. Then they're set up, and yeah, they're in great position when, if we get to 2032 and everybody says, you know what, we're just blowing up everything as it stands. Who are the 40 most powerful or influential brands, or the 30 most or whatever? Those are probably going to be in it. Those three. Two for sure, and three probably. So this is a good outcome for them. Bad outcome for the ACC in general. Good outcome for them.
Pat, we will root for revenue. They are right now replacing Howard's Rock with the Nielsen book. And you'll touch the Nielsen book and run down the field.
Chief Osceola Burning Spear will have the latest ratings attached to it. You know, when he plants it at midfield.
He'll throw it through a television.
Yeah, we got 3.5 million viewers last week. Go us!
Ross, what do you think? Victory? Like, what should they do? They're going to spend all their money. I get that. They're it's like drunken sailors. I mean, they just got off the boat. They're rolling into town. Like, all right, guys, send your money home to mom and dad. Now we're going.
Yeah.
Go right to the bar and who knows where else.
One of the interesting things here is if they're leaning on, you know, Nielsen ratings, TV ratings, which I think is a big part of the formula, it sounds like, the real interesting thing is, you know, you can kind of, kind of manipulate those ratings.
They're very accurate.
Right?
It's like, isn't there like 1,000 people like around the country with a book? Like, that's it? Like,
yeah.
Does anyone know anyone who's ever been in a Nielsen rating?
No. Actually, you know what? I think we got a Nielsen book to fill out one time, like 20 years ago.
Really?
Maybe 30.
Yeah. What you put in there, like Golden Girls and stuff like that? What are they? They would know.
I'm not even sure we remembered to do it most of the time. It was like a week later, like, oh, yeah, do you remember what we watched on Tuesday? No. Okay, no. We weren't a very good Nielsen household.
But, you know, when the game is played, obviously what the time for kickoff is important. For viewership,
of course,
right? So it's going to be interesting to see, because now kickoff times, you know, mean a little something more, I think, which is going to be kind of a fascinating situation. You know, some of those in the ACC were pretty upset, I think, this past football season, because obviously they have a deal with ESPN, they share, you know, it with the SEC and partially with the Big 12 as well, and ACC, I think, just got a couple of primetime spots on ABC. It was hogged by the SEC for the most part. And, you know, obviously those dates and times matter for ratings and all that stuff. So it's a fascinating kind of dynamic to this. Another thing is this should incentivize playing tougher games and bigger games, right? So I wonder if you'll see some of the maybe lower resource programs in the ACC change their scheduling philosophy assure that you get maybe some of these bigger primetime spots and maybe can move up in the viewership numbers. So that's kind of interesting. But in order to play those tough games, Dan, there are plenty of people in college athletics that would tell you need guaranteed access to the playoff in order to play these big non-conference games.
I wouldn't worry about it if I was Wake Forest or Boston College. You ain't getting to the playoff. I'd be like, Ohio State, please. Michigan, please. Play us. We'll come to the big house each of the next 3 years. Hey, man, it's all hands on deck. Nielsen household, 42,000 of them in the country, according to this New York Times story from 2022. 42,000 households, they have a device and they have to log in what they watched. And somehow this determines all this stuff. Aren't there shows that people would not admit they were watching?
I would think so. It wasn't the most scientific thing.
Absolutely, I was watching the PBS documentary on the Civil War. No, I was not watching this trash movie. I don't. Yeah, I don't know. But this is it. 42,000 people determined. You got to get to those people. You got to get to those people and buy them off. All of a sudden, we'll have like 15 million people be watching every Wake Forest football game. If I get a Nielsen book, I will absolutely sell out. Pat, I can't believe you may or had it, but you forgot.
I think we did. I mean, it was like 20-some years ago.
The odds of hitting this there's 370 million people in the country. There's at least 130 million television homes. 42,000. That determines it? They've been doing this since the 50s. This is the best they could come up with in the 50s. We haven't... 75 years later, we haven't come up with a better system.
Well, I mean, I remember thinking at the time that this was all, it was archaic then. It was like, you know, you take out your pen and write down Tuesday at 7:30, I watched this.
Then there's streaming. I mean, the Peacock's going to kill some of these guys. I don't know. This is not, this is interesting. All right, we'll be back after this message because we'll talk what the ACC, either how what they should do and if they, what they did win on this. So ACC does get some stability here. 5 years or so, 6 years, who knows? Everyone's there. It's ask the Pac-12. It's better than nothing. What would you do if you're the ACC over these next X number of years? Pat?
Whew, that's a good question. I mean, you're right. I think the guiding principle here for the last couple of years has been don't be the Pac-12. And so it's not that. It's better than nothing. You're keeping things together. You are going to continue to have an upper echelon that should be good. I mean, you should have teams that not only could go to the playoff, but compete in the playoff, even if, God forbid, Florida State has $20 million less than the fifth-place team in the SEC. So, you know, you've got that. You still have an ACC. Beyond that, though, yeah, bad signals and further inequity. And I think, honestly, you know, you're going to have schools, I would imagine, that are, you know, on the shorter end of this stick. They're going to be looking at their options and saying, you know what? I'm Louisville. I'm Pittsburgh. How's Big 12 doing? Do we need to possibly look at going someplace else where we're going to get a better revenue shake? You know, I wouldn't put it, say it's out of the question for schools that aren't just, you know, steeped in loyalty to the ACC and maybe feel like they have been handed a bad deal here. So I don't say they're going to get up and leave now, but you watch in 5 years and see what the possible exit plans are.
Yeah. 5 years is a long time and a lot can change. I mean, a lot changes in, you know, 1 week in college athletics these days. It's evolving so quickly. 5 years is an eternity. Think about where we were in 5 years ago, right? It was COVID. And look at all the changes that have happened in college athletics since COVID. It's been,
I think, wild. The Alliance was alive.
Yeah. the Alliance, lasted, well, 10 months. The Alliance that was born, in July 2021 and died June Alliance. 2022, maybe? Yeah
so when Britney Spears' wedding, that type of thing, the Alliance.
Yeah, USC and UCLA, yeah, did their thing. So, but so much has changed, and so much will change. And I just think, I keep harping on it, but I do think the revenue sharing right in college athletics is really going to be a dividing factor and a huge factor in splintering FBS, the kind of the long split everybody mentions. I was at an event earlier or last week in D.C. Actually, Val Ackerman of the Big East was there, and she told the audience at this event that she thought the rev share would within a year or so that many schools will just opt out of, even if they opt in, this year, that they'll eventually opt out and not be able to share revenue. And I think you're going to see that being a dividing factor. Maybe it takes 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, but there'll be some kind of splintering there. And I think, you know, being able to access your exit in around the early 2030s is probably ideal, which apparently this agreement kind of allows.
So if you are the ACC, let me ask this one. They are opposed to the 14-team playoff. They don't want it set up where the SEC and the Big Ten start the season with four automatic bids. It clearly states that they are it basically codifies that they are the weaker league. There's also an element of just competitively a wrong idea. It's a bad idea. But it does give you two spots guaranteed in a playoff. If you're the ACC, do you reverse course after this and say, we'll take our two spots and try over the next 5 years with the additional revenue and a far easier path to one of those two spots for FSU, again, who's coming off a 2-freaking-win season? Like, we're acting like, you know, as Pat alluded, and Clemson, and say, look, man, I know the Big Ten's got money. I know the SEC's got money. We all know where this is headed, but this is a nice little spot where you could be in this playoff anytime you're even reasonably good. You go to the SEC, and you're going to find out how hard it is. And as I always thought, if the Big 12 had been able to sell that to Oklahoma, you know, that's what Oklahoma gave up. They made a lot of playoffs. I don't think they're going to make as many playoffs anymore. We'll see. Nothing against Oklahoma, but it's just a lot harder to beat all these guys than it was to beat the old guys. Do you reverse course on the playoff and say, we're going to take it and hope that the path to the playoff with the addition somehow rekindles the romance between FSU and Clemson and the ACC? Pat, what do you think?
Maybe. You know, it's a tough one to walk back when you've set a public but not super strident line of like, no, we don't think this is the best thing for college football. If you then turn around and say, you know, upon second thought, we're taking this deal and we're getting out of here. So, but if that's what I think, to your point, the feeling is this is going to make sure that we're going to get two teams in when there's some years it might be dicey. You know, we may have one and a second one that's on the bubble. But going from 12 to 14 would have guaranteed them two in, even I would think, even if if Clemson had lost the ACC championship game, Miami was getting in. So in theory, you should always have two of the top 14, but in reality, I would be concerned enough, I guess, whether or not you're dealing from any position of strength. Again, I would like to see people stand up for what's best as a whole for college football, but those things are fungible and tend to take a backseat to what's best for the ACC. And that might be an easier deal for Jim Phillips to sell at this point.
Yeah, I think while there is growing disinterest in the Big 12 and in the ACC and the format that the SEC and Big 10 are exploring, this 4-4-2-2-1 deal, I think it's mainly those two leagues are mainly maybe not in support of it fully because of just the perception, just starting the season in the hole, you know, two spots. But they know, and folks in the Big 12, I think, know too, that, you know, guaranteed yourself two is not bad. I think it might be good for even some leagues, but it's just the thought of starting the season two spots in the hole. And I think Jim Phillips has been very clear about that. But you got a point, Dan, that, you know, the path to the playoff and thus the path to the success initiative in the ACC, which, again, is a lot of money. If you make it to the ACC team, makes it to the championship game, they get it. It's around $25 million if you check all these benchmarks. The path to there is easier. You know, so if you can consistently make the playoff, and that'll probably guarantee you, you know, 10 to 12 million in success initiative. And then if you get the top spot in the TV viewership, the top couple spots, and you get an extra 15 million, I mean, boom, it's 20, 25 million right there. And that kind of helps you close the gap a little bit with the SEC and the Big Ten. You know, one other thing we haven't mentioned here kind of is like the programs that didn't sue and weren't really part of this, who will benefit from this, right? We North Carolina and Duke, obviously, for basketball, because there's a vast basketball viewership bonus as well. Miami for football. You know, I think there are several programs that are going to benefit. What is what the North Carolina maybe board member said, was quoted as saying, you know, we'll let FSU and Clemson pay all the money, and then we'll see what happens. Basically, after they're, we'll let them do it. We'll let them use their expenses. And so that's kind of what's happened. Like, a lot of programs are going to benefit, but there's certainly a lot of programs, the bottom 6 to 8 of the conference, that are definitely not going to benefit. And it just grows the gap between them and everybody else within the ACC, just like it grows the gap. It's just like the CFP distribution grows the gap between the SEC, Big Ten, and everybody else. You know, it's just, this is on a little bit more micro level.
Definitely a good time for Carolina hoops to extend Hubert Davis. That was a important thing for them to get done. The other thing that going to the playoff does is it actually is the whole point. You could be winning. That would sell tickets and t-shirts and, you know, I know it's not on a spreadsheet, but I bet you Indiana football is going to make more money next year than last year. And all of that. One other question. Notre Dame. Notre Dame right now is able to sit in the catbird seat with a 5-game scheduling agreement with the ACC, which now will include 2 games a year against Florida State, Miami, Clemson. It's just those three, or is North Carolina on that? I think it's just those three.
I think it's just those three.
Okay. And with 5 games against those three, or 5 games against the ACC, Navy, USC, and Stanford, you have your 8-game schedule. Notre Dame is able to survive as an independent. If Clemson and Florida State leave at some point, or North Carolina leaves, could this threaten the Notre Dame's independence in half a decade or something like that? Pat?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a legitimate concern. Every destabilizing factor, I think, kind of adds to Notre Dame's precarious situation. And they are, you know, obviously super tied to that league other than football. And, you know, they need a healthy ACC to anchor their teams, but still give them the sweetheart deal, the friends with benefits, where they can still be a football independent. And, you know, every single kind of iteration that happens where fundamental changes happen, I think kind of puts Notre Dame a little closer to having to make a hard decision. They don't want to do it. They don't have to do it right now. But they've got to be sitting there concerned probably as well about where things are going with the ACC. And, yeah, this is a five-year runway for them, too, to, you know, see if they've got a long-term and by long-term, I mean, you know, 20 years long-term or 15 path to remain independent. I think they're going to be monitoring it really closely to see what the viability is of the ACC.
Yeah, I don't know if it's actually like a part of the official settlement terms, but this new scheduling deal where basically Clemson, I believe it'll be Clemson and Notre Dame will play every year, and then Notre Dame will play either North Carolina or Florida State or Miami at least once a year. I think you said, Dan, like I don't know if that's like formally a part of the settlement, but I think that it was – a talking point for the future, what the future would look like. And I think a lot of it came from Notre Dame, you know, actually. So that's why I don't know how big of a part of the settlement it was, because it really did come, it seems like, more from Notre Dame, because they want their schedule to be stronger. And if there's any way for them to, you know, help stabilize the league and keep Clemson and Florida State in it, since they themselves have a grant of rights with this partial membership through 2036, they were going to do it, and I think they had a hand in doing that. But of course, this guarantees in a lot of ways, right, that Clemson will play, you know, Clemson and Florida State will play Notre Dame every other year, every year in the case of Clemson. And thus, the TV viewership numbers will be up. Well, their viewership numbers will be higher because they're playing them. So, you know, it's all kind of strategic there.
Well, not good. Be best if we just went back to having a lot of 10-team leagues that made sense. But that isn't happening.
Yes, as you were going through, you know, like the what a concept the original premise was to have regional like-minded institutions playing each other in a manageable sized league. Everybody played everybody else. There was a clear champion. Yeah, no, well, that was a while ago.
Your neighbor went to one school, your other neighbor went to another, or they're a fan of this, or their uncle went to this place. Like, yeah, now it's, you know, backyard brawls. Cal and Boston College is what it is. All right, we'll be back with the new TV show and how it maybe could be repurposed in college. All right, there's a new TV series coming out from A&E. Pat, did you put that down on your Nielsen book back in the day, the A&E?
I guess the A&E existed back then, but if I put it down, I was lying.
I think, anyway, well, here's the new series. If anyone with a Nielsen book wants to watch it, Stadium Lockup. I was a big fan of the show Lockup Raw. They used to go inside the prison. That was good. This is kind of a Stadium Lockup. It follows the security team at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Game day can be an electric cathartic, emotional experience shared by over 67,000 diehard fans who come together inside this city within a city. Oh, they're a bunch of drunk, rowdy bums. That's what they are. So much excitement comes, plenty of action, and the security team must stay on high alert. Anyway, that's it. So we're going to follow how they break up fights, deal with unruly fans, and deal with medical emergencies inside Cleveland Brown Stadium. Also, the team sucks. I don't know if they're going to deal with that, but perhaps
that,
not.
Yeah.
So the question I have for you guys, the question I have is, if we were to repurpose this show for college football, I think Cleveland and its dog pound and its angry fans at their terrible team is a good place for the NFL to do this. Still not really sure what the point of the show is, but what stadium would we find the greatest propensity for mayhem? We just did which SEC fan base has the most guys in prison. That was our last show, if you want to go back. Which stadium would have the most exciting stadium lockup at the college ranks, and why is it BYU? No, I'm only kidding. It's clearly not BYU. So who is it, Pat? What stadium?
Yeah, I have to say, first of all, I would rather see this stadium lock up, I think, from the Eagles, maybe even the Bills, although they're happy fans because they're winning, both of them. So maybe Cleveland is the good spot for that. From a college standpoint, look, I think we got to go right back to the state pen. You got to go to LSU. They're as drunk as anybody, and when things go wrong there, oh, my God, they are a mean, mean bunch. They get so angry. So I think LSU would be tough to beat, unless, you know, if they're 12-0, they're probably not beating up on each other. But if anything less than 12-0, you lose a home game, that's got to be a nasty place. So I would say LSU is the leader in the clubhouse. But I would also, like, not overlooks like a dark horse kind of place like Oklahoma State, where, you know, they're feisty and they haven't been very good lately. And I know they like their occasional drinky down there in Oklahoma, that I think that could be a good spot as well. But I think LSU's the clear leader in the clubhouse for if I'm drawing up my story pitch.
Yeah, I would. That's what I was going to go with as well. But down there in Gainesville too, they're close they pose a close challenge, I think, down there in Gainesville and the Florida men. You know, in Baton Rouge, when I was a beat writer there, lived down there in Baton Rouge, it was in the middle of the push to legalize the selling of alcohol in the SEC. And big surprise, LSU administration, and state lawmakers were leading that charge. And part of the reason because so many people entered Tiger Stadium illegally carrying booze or just chugging right before they got in to get as drunk as humanly possible because you couldn't buy beer once in the stadium. And so the one of the reasonings was that you must legalize this is because we have to stop these people from crushing beer right before they enter the stadium or doing keg stands. But it worked. It worked. They actually say the numbers have declined because now it's available. It's available. So But I true story, went to an LSU game with my dad and my grandpa. This was probably back in the early 2000s. And my grandpa had this flask forever. I mean, it was like a 50-year-old family heirloom flask, filled it with bourbon. His Gentleman Jack Daniels was his drink of choice. Filled it with Gentleman Jack, and they caught it. They caught him with it at entering the stadium in And they took it, and it's been never seen again.
Family heirloom flask. Now, that's a family right there.
You know, the Coast people, Pat.
Yeah. I'm not judging at all. Not at all.
Yeah, I like a flask with some experience. I think that's a good one. A little thing's been around. Heroin. What was it?
Well, and Grandpa was so shocked, right? He's like, wait a second. People do this all the time here.
I've been drinking in it 50 years.
Yeah. I mean, people do it. You know, all these kids have, you know, stuff down their pants, and Grandpa can't come in with an heirloom flask of bourbon.
I mean, what year was this? This could have been in Prohibition.
Early 2000s. It was probably 2000, 2001.
I mean, you got to give it back. I'm going to give you two. First off, Texas A&M deserves a shout out here. If only for the antics. Do you guys forget the antics of the Texas game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Texas A&M police Twitter account. A man was riding a horse and another man and his dog were riding a longhorn on campus. And then there's video. Fake tickets. Two men wearing reflective vests and hard hats entered the stadium with fake construction credentials. Arrested for criminal trespass. Seems a little bit much. And then this immortal one, intoxicated subject, released to sober wife.
Oh,
yeah.
That bad way to go.
No, that guy never, ever recover from that one. But I got to give a special shout out to our friends in Morgantown. Let's not sleep on the Mountaineer fans.
Yeah, I was thinking of them after I said Oklahoma State. I was like, they may not even be the top in the Big 12. West Virginia, awfully tough to beat.
Stadium lockup. So I don't know. Check it out. Maybe it's good. Maybe we can get that. Listen, if some of these ACC schools need to make a little money, get a little extra buck to catch up with Florida State. Get an A&E series. All ideas on deck. All ideas on deck. All right. That is our show. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back later this week. We will talk to you later.